Hello, Mets fans and other randomly confused people who've happened upon this podcast. Welcome to episode number, seven, I think, of Unformatable, where we take a look back at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky, wacky history, as every player who dons the blue and orange, or in today's case, probably some black, is in their own way unformatable to us. So as I mentioned, I think in an earlier pod, I've been trying to get some suggestions, and some of you out there have been kind enough to submit them. This is the one I've seen the most often. I'll admit, I was a little skeptical. I thought it was a little too prominent of a player, but maybe I'm just showing my age a little bit. Wouldn't be the first time. And you've got to give the people what they want, right? And it's summer blockbuster movie season, which comes earlier and earlier. I mean, The Avengers at the end of April? It's just bizarre. Get me wrong, enjoyed it, but come on. So there are a lot of other Met pop culture references and cameos that I love. I love pointing out the Met hat and city slickers. Even fucking Billy Crystal had to wear a Met hat back then because it was our fucking town back then, as I love to reminisce about. But there might not be a more widely known Met pop culture moment than this one, or at least not one in a bigger, more successful movie than the one we'll touch on today. Folks, we're gonna travel back to halcyon time when a Will Smith blockbuster inspired glee in the masses, and what the heck is that giant horrible blue thing reaction in the masses, to look at the baseball and brief but memorable movie career of our old friend Mr. Bernard Gilkey. So, Otis Bernard Gilkey. Didn't know Bernard wasn't his first name, did you? If you did, you're better than me, because I didn't know that till I started doing this research. Was born in St. Louis, and was known more for basketball than baseball in high school, where he turned down a basketball scholarship to Drake University, thinking he wasn't tall enough to really pursue a basketball career, apparently, and signed as an undrafted free agent with his hometown St. Louis Cardinals. Goddamn Cardinals, they work their way into all of these podcasts somehow. I'm just going to have my wife on one week and have it out in a Mets-Cardinals debate. At any rate, as an undrafted free agent, I would imagine the odds seemed against Gilkey getting that far, but if you look at his minor league numbers, speed and patience were his clear calling cards. He worked his way slowly but steadily through the minors, stole as many as 56 bases in one minor league season, and consistently across the minors seemed to walk more than he struck out. So he eventually worked his way up and got a cup of coffee at the end of the 1990 season, and went from undrafted free agent to starting left fielder for his hometown team at the start of the 1991 season. Gilkey showed a little promise, particularly in 1992-93, hitting over 300 each of those seasons, drawing a fair share of walks. Frankly, he might have been more appreciated in this day and age for his on-base percentage skills. I know I appreciated him as a fantasy baseball target back in the days when we had to tabulate results by hand, God help us all, but in 1993 he had 16 homers and 15 stolen bases, so you know, one of those, you gotta love those power speed guys, and it seemed like he was a burgeoning one. To that point, his 1993 was his best season, 16 homers, 15 stolen bases, .303 average, but he regressed in 1994, had a really bad year. Bounced back somewhat in 1995, but the Cardinals had a disappointing season, especially for the storied, the mighty storied Cardinals franchise. They finished in fourth place with a 62-81 record, and that 95 season for the Cards saw the midseason dismissal of one clueless Joe Torre as manager. So the Cardinals decided to clean house in 95. And for the price of three minor leaguers, neither you or I have probably ever heard of. Actually, one of the names kind of rang a bell, but unless they're family for you, I don't know. So let's see: Yudith Osorio, Eric Hilgis, and Eric Ludwig were the three minor leaguers the Mets traded to the Cardinals for Bernard Gilkey. In '95, the Mets were coming off a surprisingly frisky Generation K-fueled 69 and 75 finish. They tied for second place in the relatively new, in the first season that finished and had a playoff in the new National League East, a mere 21 games behind the eventual world champion Braves. So they had acquired a starting left fielder for the 1996 season for that small minor league package. And so Bernard Gilkey came to the New York Mets. Well, 1996 wouldn't be a much better season for the New York Mets. Instead of 69 and 75 in a strike-shortened second-place season, 21 games behind the Braves, they'd finished 1996 71 and 91, 25 games behind the Braves, who would not repeat as world champions that year, losing the World Series to, I can't recall. I just guess we won't discuss it at all. Actually, you know what? I will discuss it. I fucking rooted for the Yankees in that World Series, which I, to my eternal pain and shame and chagrin, I was in college then, and I had friends who had, oh, 1978. Like, now I realize I should have cherished those 18-year that 18-year stretch. But yeah, I had all these friends who didn't remember the Yankees winning, had never seen them win. The Braves were these, the Braves were the dynasty then, or the burgeoning dynasty. I actually was like, oh, I'll root for the Yankees. My friends will be happy, and my family will be happy. Who cares? What could go wrong with the Yankees winning one World Series? You want to know what could go wrong with the Yankees winning one World Series? The last 25 fucking years, basically. So when people ask me why I hate the Yankees so much, that's why. Well, one of many reasons.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation. And I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Hey, everybody. I'm Neil I. Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, and this is The Vergecast. Vergecast is the flagship podcast of The Verge. Every week, we cover the latest in tech news and reviews. We take a critical look at what is going on now and next in the world of tech. The show is hosted by me, our executive editor, Dieter Bohn.
Not your friend.
And Paul Miller.
It just feels like there's something wrong with all computers, though. Don't you think that sometimes?
We do that on Fridays. And on Tuesdays, we have an interview episode. I've been talking to all kinds of influential people in and around the world of tech. We talked to Microsoft founder Bill Gates about his philanthropic efforts.
You can design systems without having to reveal any individual's particular medical record.
Journalists and academics like Lina Khan, who thinks that we should be doing way more to break up giant companies like Amazon and Facebook.
I think in hindsight, allowing Facebook to buy up both WhatsApp and Instagram proved to have been the wrong call.
And we talked to tech CEOs like Vizio's Bill Baxter, who explained exactly how smart TV manufacturers make their money.
It's about post-purchase monetization of the TV.
It's ads.
It's ads. Check us out every Friday to hear about everything in tech, from new iPhone leaks to breaking down Facebook's ongoing issues of privacy to just me and Paul ranting at each other about the role of the government. And check us out on Tuesdays when I host the interview episode. Subscribe to The Vergecast wherever podcasts are served. We'll see you then.
But I digress. Sorry, Bernard Gilkey. You deserve better than that rant. Because while the Mets would have a poor 1996 and their eternal nemesis, the Braves and the Yankees, would not, the Mets' poor season in 96 could in no way, shape, or form be blamed on their new left fielder, who went on there to have one of the great individual seasons in Mets history. In 1996, Bernard Gilkey had 44 doubles, which is still a Met franchise record, which I just looked up. I can't believe Murph or the captain never topped that, but close but no cigar there. And nice to see Bernard still on top of the leader list and something, I guess. He also had 30 home runs and 117 RBIs, and, oh, by the way, also led the league with 18 outfield assists that year. One of six times in his career he had double-digit outfield assists. All of that added up to an 8.1 B-WAR, six on the offensive side of the ball, which is still ninth all-time in franchise history. So you add in that amazing season of Gilkey's with Todd Hundley's franchise record alone at the time, 41 home runs that season, and the one dog, Lance Johnson, and his equally amazing 7.0 WAR season. I forget, he had like 230-something hits that year, I think. Whatever it is, I'm sure that's still the Mets record. And a roster with names sprinkled with names you'd recognize, like a young Edgardo Alfonso, I believe the first season of Ray Ordonez, I'd have to look that up too, and also Jeff Kent. Some other names perhaps better suited for future episodes of this podcast. You might have expected a better season with some of those amazing seasons we just discussed, but and you don't know much about the history of Generation K, do you? Which I guess could be its own podcast, probably. But the downfall began before the highlights ever really began. Bill Pulsifer was out for the year. I forget if it was shoulder or Tommy John. Jason Isringhausen and Paul Wilson struggled mightily, and all of Bernard's Herculean efforts went for naught, at least for baseball results, because maybe it was just the position and the time, but yeah, I'd like to think at least partly what a good season he has. That amazing season of Bernard's made him a natural choice for one of the great Met moments in silver screen history. So I'm hoping the original Men in Black is old enough that the spoiler alert caveat isn't necessary here, but you know, just in case. Spoiler alert, the climax of the original Men in Black takes place rather famously in scenic Flushing Meadows Corona Park. The movie it was a good movie, I thought, or, you know, again, I was 20, 21, it was probably its target audience, but again, the movie posits that the 1964 World's Fair observation towers are secret alien spaceships in disguise. And when that one of those said spaceships takes off and is utilized in an alien escape attempt, its course, as the course of many a flying object, unidentified or other, does, naturally took it right over Shea Stadium. So in the movie, this UFO flying over Shea Stadium is a great distraction to our Mr. Bernard Gilkey, who is distracted and gets hit in the head with a fly ball as the spaceship flies overhead in a delightful visual gag. So, not to be shady, I do have, you know, really fond memories of Bernard Gilkey, but you know, who knows, maybe the scene took a lot of takes, the fly balls to the head had some effect, hopefully there was some CGI then if we had that. But Bernard never was quite the same, although it would be a hard season to replicate, but he was never quite the same after that 1996 career year. The Mets certainly hoped he would. They signed him to a four-year, $20 million contract that we'll come back to shortly. But he, after 1996 and Men in Black, he came back down to earth. Sorry, I had to. I didn't have to, but I did. He came back down to earth. He was pretty much league average, a little better, maybe. Well, league average in 1997. He did put up a 2.4 B-WAR, maybe thanks to defense. He had an even 100 OPS plus. And then he struggled very mightily in 1998 and started to lose playing time in left field to the aforementioned Todd Hundley, whose ill-fated left field tenure began as... after he came back from injury to make room for one Mike Piazza. So with no room on the roster for the struggling Gilkey, and probably to save some money and dig up some coins in the couch cushions to, you know, as it was coming to the end of the year and it was clear the Mets were going to have to pony up to keep Mike Piazza in New York, At the trade deadline in 1998, Gilkey was shipped to Arizona. Gilkey would never come back to the Mets, but he was shipped away with someone who would make his way back to the Mets more than once in more than one way, Mr. Nelson Figueroa, for as inauspicious a package as he arrived for. As Willie Blair and Jose Fabergé came to the Mets, and of course cash considerations, which I'll pretend helped us keep Mike Piazza and makes it okay. Gilkey never came, after he left the Mets, it was a rare case where his best seasons were with the Mets. He never came close to 96 or really even 97 again. He was a part-time player for the Diamondbacks, then the Red Sox, before wrapping up his career with the Atlanta Braves in 2001. He did have a solid season as a platoon player for the 1999 Diamondbacks, and he got 6 at-bats against our New York Mets in the 1999 NLDS, going 0-for-6, thank goodness. I mentioned before I would probably revisit his contract. So, after that incredible 96 season, Gilkey signed a 4-year, $20 million contract with the Mets. And it included, as you may have heard mentioned with Mets before, a lot of deferred money. Actually, Gilkey was getting his deferred money. The Diamondbacks assumed the whole contract in 98, so they were actually the ones paying all that money to Bernard Gilkey through 2017. I just thought it was interesting because we always hear about fucking Bobby Bonilla and, the Mets are still paying Bobby Bonilla. How ridiculous. There are hundreds of contracts out. Well, maybe not hundreds, but there are enough contracts involving deferred money. And it infuriates me when that comes up and I just don't know it about any other player. I never knew Gilkey signed that contract. I never knew he was still getting paid. You would think they would mention it because it was the Mets, just to LOL Mets us again, even if the Mets aren't doing the payout. But I digress. Bernard Gilkey had a great year with the Mets, earned that contract, and I hope he enjoyed all that deferred money that he worked into his contract and got paid by the Diamondbacks through 2017. Couldn't find out a whole lot else about his life after baseball. He did move back to his hometown of St. Louis, and his sons play college baseball in NCAA Division IIA. His sons, Jalen and Kaven. A few years ago, he tested his coaching chops in fantasy camps and also, I think, in spring training with the Diamondbacks. This was in 2014. This was like the last info I could find on MLB, but I've heard nothing of him ever leaving. Moved back to his hometown, and I guess the lure of coaching is not quite enough to get him out of it. So Bernard Gilkey is retired from baseball, and I guess retired from acting, but we'll always have 1996, and we will always have the Men in Black. And for those reasons and many others, Bernard Gilkey was an incredibly unformidable Met. I'm Rob Wolf, and thank you so much for listening to Unformatable. I really appreciate it. Please go to Amazing Avenue, amazingavenue.com for Mets-related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find Unformatable and all of our truly amazing podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. If you can subscribe, and especially if you can leave a review, it really helps. The original music on this podcast is by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR, and the show is at Unformatable. I will sincerely try to tweet more. Get with the new technology. I will do my best, and if you interact, I'll happily interact back. Thank you again for listening.